Hi, everybody. My name is Grace McIntyre, and I live in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, today. I'd like to start with a reading from Courage to Change. This is how I felt when I first came, my first few days of Al-Anon. There was a piece of reality that I never wanted to see. I loved someone who couldn't be trusted. Again and again, I suffered the disappointment of broken promises, contradictions, and outright lies. Each time I felt crushed, betrayed, outraged. Nevertheless, hours or sometimes days later, I put the incident out of my mind. When the next promise was made, I trusted without hesitation and with my whole heart. And that's how it was with me in my home. The lies, I believed them. And one day I was at work, and it's really amazing how my higher power was always there with me and I didn't see it. One day I was at work, I work in a small office, and there's only four of us, and I broke down crying, and I said, I think my husband has a drinking problem. And one of the men in the office talked to me a little bit, and then he went outside through the parking lot into the building next door and went to the Al-Anon Family Services office and brought me back some pamphlets. And he said, there's some ladies over there that want to talk to you right now. You have to go now. So I left. I left and went over and talked to these ladies. I don't remember who they were or what they said. I just know that I cried and cried and cried because I didn't know what to do. I had tried plenty of things. They opened up the where and when and said, you need to go to an Al-Anon meeting. And I said, where are they and when are they? And when they looked, they said, there's one right down the street. And it just got over. And I cried and cried and cried. I had missed my first meeting. There was a meeting on Monday at 10 o'clock, Tuesday at 11, and Wednesday at 1. And I asked my boss if I could take my lunch at those times so I could go to those meetings. The man that had knew that the Al-Anon office was next door was a member of AA, and he had been an AA member for 10 years. And when I came back to the office, he talked with me some more, and he said that I needed to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I listened to him. And I went to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I am just so grateful that that person was there to help me to understand and answer some questions. He answered a lot of questions for me. Every time I came back from a meeting, he would say, how did it go? And I would just not understand what the heck was going on. And for the longest time, he answered questions, you know, like for about 3 weeks, and then he finally said, you need to get a sponsor. And I didn't know what a sponsor was, but he said, I'm not going to answer any more questions until you get a sponsor. So I tested him out, and he didn't answer me. So the first meeting I went to, there was this lady there that I really thought was really sweet and everything, and I said, next time I go back to that Monday meeting, I'll ask her. And then I went to the Tuesday meeting, and she wasn't there, but I had seen another lady, and I thought, I will ask her, and she didn't show up. And on Wednesday, there was another lady that I had really, you know, I kind of liked, this other lady, and she didn't come back. And there were four meetings in my hometown in Murfreesboro, and there was a lady there that seemed like a school teacher, and I kind of liked her. And the next time, when I got the courage, within 2 weeks, when I got the courage to ask that lady, she didn't come back. And, of course, I'm still asking Ron questions, and he's not answering me at all. He just kept saying, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. So I had gone through four choices already that weren't there, and then there was another meeting in Murfreesboro that I went to, and I liked that lady, and she didn't come back. And I thought, what is going on here? And there was one lady at the meeting, at my home meeting, that was always there. And I said, she is not going to be my sponsor. She is too tough. I need someone who is sweet and kind and loving. And so she was the only one left that was always there. So I asked her, I said, would you be my sponsor? And she said, yes. And it was after a meeting. And as soon as she said yes, I turned around and I went home. I got a sponsor. And so the next time I saw her at the meeting, which was, 4 or 5 days later, after the meeting, she said, "We need to talk." And I thought, oh, crap, I've already made her mad. I mean, I haven't even talked to her since the last time. So she sat me down and she said, "Here's some things that I want you to do. I want you to call me every day." And my first thought was, oh, my God, you're going to be crazy. I don't even know you, lady. I mean, what am I going to say to you? Now, I can call people in my family, and I can talk to 3 hours about nothing. And she wants me to call her every day, and I have nothing to say because I don't know her. But anyway, so I did what she asked me to do. I went to, like I said, 90 meetings in 90 days. She asked me to write about my feelings. The first thing to do was write about my feelings, and I did that. Every feeling that I had was, I'm okay today, I'm okay today, I'm okay today. And for weeks, that's all I knew, that's all I knew. My husband was still living at home at the time. My mother had moved in with us and had been living there for 10 years. And I'm going to meetings and I'm calling her, and you know, God was so good. Most of the time when I called her, she wasn't there, and I just left a message. Hi, this is Grace. I'm just checking in. And when I saw her at meetings, those are the days I didn't call her, and she pulled me aside and said, "We need to talk." And I said, "Okay." And she said, on the days that we see each other at a meeting, I want you to call me those days also, because I go to the meeting for me, and after the meeting, I want to fellowship with the other people. We can talk about your stuff. That's why you call me every day. And I thought, oh, okay, I can do that. So before Al-Anon, my life was very unmanageable. Here are some things that I did that chose me today how insane my life was. When I would get up in the morning, I would open the refrigerator and count the beers. And then I would go out on the patio, open the refrigerator and count the beers out there, get in my car, get down the end of the driveway and forget how many beers there were. But every day I came home from work and I counted the beers again. And I did that for a long time. I don't know how long, and that was way before I started Al-Anon. And I recognized one time that I didn't know how many beers there were. So I went over to the car he drove, and I pushed the odometer to see how many miles he drove every day. And I always forgot, you know, 3 days would go by, and I hadn't looked at the odometer, and I'd push it again. Just crazy stuff. I met my husband in 1979 in Florida. My parents had retired. I was born in Massachusetts, and I lived in Massachusetts until I was about 15, and my parents moved to New Hampshire, and I graduated from high school in New Hampshire. They retired and moved to Florida, and I stayed in New Hampshire, and I was unmarried. In 1978, my dad and mom both got sick and needed someone to go and take care of them, so since I didn't have a family other than myself, I moved to Florida to be with my parents. Well, the town that they lived in was very small, and there was nothing to do, and I stayed with them, and I looked for a job, and there were no jobs, but the town had 7 bars. So I got a job as a barmaid. A couple of weeks ago, I was with a bunch of Al-Anon friends, and some of them were AA members, and the girls said, "I've never been any place where there's been a bar person that wasn't an alcoholic." And I said, "Me." In the back of the bar, they had these crates that you could stand on so that you could be tall enough to serve at the bar, and I mean, it worked for me, and that's where I met him. Everyone that knew him knew his family and knew my family, and they all said that I was perfect for him. But I didn't know that he wasn't perfect for me. But it was the one that brought me to Al-Anon. We moved to Tennessee in 79, and in 1997 is when I went to my first Al-Anon meeting, so I was pretty darn crazy. I can look at it today and see how just driving to work in the morning was an ordeal. I would get in my car and my mind would start buzzing. These people, where did they get their driver's license at? Target? Hello, I'm in the fast lane and you're going slow. Why don't you move over? And I would get that close to them. I would just be right on their bumper thinking, I can drive your car for you if you would just move over. And of course, it never worked. And then if somebody got behind me because I wasn't going fast enough, I would step on my brake. I would show them. I mean, and when I got into Kroger and got my cart and my food in the cart, and got to the checkout lane, and there's only, it says, the sign says, 10 or less, you've got a basket full. I was angry at everybody and everything. And I didn't know that until I came to Al-Anon, and I got to see that with the help of my sponsor. She told me that I needed to go to at least 3 meetings a week, which I did do, and I called her every day, and I read my literature every day. I would come to the meeting in the evenings, and everyone else would have their book, and I didn't have mine because mine is at home, and that's where I read in the morning. And then I would bring my book to the meeting, and I wouldn't have one at home to read, so I had to go to the Literature Depot, which was right next door to my office, and buy more books. I have home books, and I have meeting books today still, so that I'm never without my literature. As a matter of fact, I've got it here with me. It was, I started my first meeting in June 27th, 1997, and in November, my husband and I divorced. I told him that I was going to Al-Anon because I thought that his drinking was bothering me so much that I wanted something different to happen in our life. And he evidently, I don't know, he just didn't like the idea that I recognized he had a drinking problem, and he left and moved to Florida and lived with his mother. And we got divorced, and my mom was still living with me. And she was 82, and she was not well. And so in February, she got sick and had to go to the hospital, and she was really afraid and didn't want to. She didn't want to go to the hospital, but I encouraged her to go just for a week and see how she'd improve. And she got out of bed by herself one morning and fell, and after that it wasn't good. She was in there for 2 weeks, and when she came home, she was at home for just under 2 weeks. My sponsor, the doctor wanted to talk to me while Mom was still in the hospital, and I asked my sponsor to come with me because I wanted to make sure that I understood what the doctor was saying. And she came and listened, and I heard what the doctor said, and the doctor left, and my sponsor said, Grace, did you hear what the doctor said? And I said, yes. She said that another couple of days and Mom can come home and everything will be better because she can get up out of bed by herself and she can go to the bathroom and she can get her coffee in the morning and I can go to work and I can come home. And she said, that isn't what the doctor said. And I said, well, that's what I heard. And she said, that's not what the doctor said. So for the first week that Mom was home, my sister-in-law, who lived in the next town, would come in the morning so that I could go to work, and she would take care of Mom. Mom couldn't feed herself, and we had a diaper on her, and it was just, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that before she went in the hospital. So, it got to the point where we had to decide, my brothers and I, whether or not she could stay at home, and she couldn't. We had to put her in a nursing home. So on Monday, the hospice people came and said that she wasn't, her heart palpitations were so fast that she wouldn't survive the ride to the end of the driveway. So they said, we'll wait another day. So, that night, my sponsor called and said, Grace, if you need me, I'll come and spend the night with you. And I thought to myself, I'm a big girl. Why would she want to come and spend the night with me? I didn't know. She recognized things that I didn't. And then she asked me again, and she said, if you want, I will come and spend the night with you. And there was something in her voice. She says, I'm not going to ask you again. And I said, okay, come on over. So she came and spent the night with me. And the next day, my sister-in-law came, And I went to work and did the payroll and came back home. And my sponsor said, if you want, I'll spend the night with you again tonight. And I thought, you know, what the heck? I don't, you know, it'll be fine. And that was Tuesday night. And when I got up Wednesday morning, I think it was around about 4 o'clock in the morning, I went in to check her and she was gone. And I'm just so grateful that my sponsor was there, that I didn't have to do that by myself. I mean, what a gift that Al-Anon gave me, that I got to listen to other people, to recognize in their voice something that I didn't feel in my heart. I was always afraid of living alone. And when I was married to my husband, one of the things I didn't want to get divorced. I had been married once before for a couple of years and got divorced, and I didn't want to do that again. I didn't want to be alone, and I was so afraid of being alone that I couldn't go past where I was until I came to Al-Anon. And after we went to New Hampshire with Mom, and I came home, when I opened the door to my home and walked in there, I felt at peace. I wasn't afraid at all. It was just such a miracle that something that I had been so afraid of for so long wasn't there anymore. When I think about my mom, I think about how much of a better daughter I could have been to her. I hadn't been in Al-Anon but 9 months when she passed away. I can remember being in Kroger with, she always wanted to go to Kroger with me. And of course, I was impatient. I'm go there, I want to get my groceries, and I want to get home. And, you know, I didn't want to spend time at the grocery store. And she was old, and she was slow, and she wanted her own cart. And I would go buzzing through the grocery store, and she'd be on aisle 2, and I'm done. And she would pick everything off the shelf and have to read the ingredients of everything. And it was so frustrating. I wasn't the best daughter I would like to have been, but I know today that I was the best daughter I could be. I was never cruel to her, but I wasn't as patient as I could have been. Today I know that. And I'm grateful that I had that time with her, that I had some Al-Anon in me before it was time for her to go. I was angry, I was frustrated, and I was mad at God because he took my mother from me when I could finally give her the best daughter she should have. And I know today that I did. I gave her what I had to give. So then we started working on the steps with my sponsor. I went through steps 1 and 2 and 3. Step 2, it talked about in step 2, I can't even read now, restoring me to sanity, and I just didn't like that sanity thing. That meant that I was insane at some time, and I was not insane. I have papers to prove it. So my sponsor said, well, Grace, let's consider some of the things that you've done. And she said, let's talk about the refrigerator and the counting. And I said, oh, yeah, okay. And she said, now, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And I said, true, okay. So I could accept step 2, that I was, someone else could restore me to sanity. You know, when I first came to my first Al-Anon meetings, the building that my home group, the building that we were in at the time, was a large building and smoke-filled. And when you walked in was the AA room, and you had to walk past all of them and into the Al-Anon room. And see, at the time, it was them. And that's where my sponsor sat, with them. And that's why I wasn't going to choose her as a sponsor, because she sat with them. And every time, I always came to meetings early. I like to come early and get a good seat. I mean, I've got a choice of every seat that's in there because I'm early. And she was there early too. So she would hug me, and then she would say, hey, Joe, Grace is here. And then Joe would come over and hug me, and I'd think, oh, God. And then somebody else would come over and hug me. And, you know, in time, I got to enjoy those hugs, and it wasn't them anymore. They were now my friends, and I got to hug on all of my friends in all of the rooms. And that was pretty amazing. But that God thing, every one of the steps it talks about, God, 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 I didn't want to hear about God. I felt that God had done all of this to me, that I didn't really have a choice in the matter at all. Thank goodness I was able to listen to the members share in the meetings about what God had done to them and how they got to see life differently. And I too got that feeling inside that, well, maybe it isn't all God's fault. Maybe I did have a part in some of this. When I was a little girl in school, every Sunday we'd go to church, and after church there was Sunday school. And I had mentioned this earlier to one of our sweet members here. One of the things about not understanding or thinking or knowing what God was, I didn't like my name. My name is Grace. And there weren't anybody named Grace anywhere. I was the shortest person everywhere. And my hair was bright orange, so I looked like a carrot. And when I went to Sunday school, the nuns sat on the end of the row, and the children sat next to them. And the nun always had me sit next to her. So I don't know what that meant, but when we'd, you know, you sit, you stand, you kneel, and every time I'd kneel, the only thing you could see were my little hands, and the nun would shush me back like this to sit down. So now there's something different about Grace. She can't even kneel when everybody else kneels. She's supposed to sit down, and I really didn't understand at that time. In Sunday school, I remember specifically the nun said, God is everywhere. And I looked all around and I didn't see nothing but us. And I raised my hand and she said, yes, Grace. I said, but I don't see him. Where is he? And she said, he's everywhere. And I'm thinking, but I don't understand. And the nun got frustrated with me, and that's when it was, what is this God crap? I mean, I just didn't understand. Where is God? I knew that there was a God. I thought he lived in the church down the end of the street, that he didn't live in my house, that he wasn't there all the time. I didn't understand until I came to Al-Anon. Some of the things that helped me recognize a God was the things that had changed in my thinking. This friend Ron, he was really such a sweet guy. One of the things he said to me was, events are going to happen, but once your thinking changes, your actions will change. So I was sitting out on my front doorstep shortly after the divorce, and it was a cold afternoon like today, and I was crying, and I never called my sponsor when I was crying. I'd always wait until after I had solved the problem. I don't do that today. So I was sitting there crying, feeling self-pity, and I looked down, and there was this huge red flower, and I looked, and my thought was, how sweet that God would put that there for me right now when I need it. And I thought, where did that thought come from? Something that God had done for me. And it was just, and I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I started feeling something different inside. And those little things that added up helped me change my perspective of a higher power. Since I was so unsure about this God, higher power, in my journaling, I started making a journal. I turned it to the back of the journal, and I started writing the things down that I felt God had done for me. And it really helped me see a little bit better and understand a little bit more frequently what God was. One of the things my sponsor suggested was, she kept saying, take God with you. And I said, I don't know what is this take God with you? I don't understand what that is. And she said, well, you know, God likes to go for car rides. Let him be the co-pilot. And I thought, oh, sheesh, what is she talking about? So I got a sticky note and I wrote God and stuck it on my dashboard. Because I didn't know how to take God with me. And I'm at work one day and I'm crying and I call my sponsor and she says, did you leave God in the car? Another sticky note, wrote it God, put it right next to my phone. And so in order for me to try to remember putting God, or God is always there with me, I had sticky notes in the bathroom, on the mirror, on the refrigerator, on my dining room table, next to the TV, because I didn't know how to take God with me. In time, I got to understand that. I went to an Al-Anon day in Lewisburg, and one of the workshops was Let Go and Let God. And they had balloons, and they wrote stuff on the balloon and let them go. I didn't understand that either. Let go and let God. And I just didn't understand. I could not fathom what they were talking about. It was just so foreign to me. So I started reading a lot more about our slogans. And I got to journal about them and got to understand a little bit more about what the slogans meant. And I learned how to let go and let God. But it was really amazing how I could let go and let God of this thing, and then something else popped up. And I'd have to try it again and learn again how to let go and let God. And then something else would happen, and I'd just keep doing it over and over and over again. So I worked steps 1, 2, and 3 with my sponsor, and then it came time for step 4. And I took out my journal and sat in the kitchen, on the kitchen table, and took the pen in my hand and the paper, and I started crying. And so I put it down and waited a couple of days, and I picked it up again, and I started crying. So I went in the dining room and picked up the pen and tried to write, and nothing happened. I went out on the patio. I went out on the front porch. I went to the park and sat and prayed, and every time I started, I would start to cry. And my sponsor only asked me twice in like about 6 weeks, how you doing on step 4? And I said, I'm working on it. And then she'd call again and say, how's it going? And I said, I'm working on it. And then she called me one day and she said, I want you to bring it over here to me. And I thought, oh crap, I'm in trouble now. And so she said, let's see what you've got there. And I said, I just can't. Nothing happens. I just start crying. And so she said, we were using the path to recovery. And she said, okay, read that question there. And I read the question, and she said, yes. And I answered her, and she said, write it down. So I wrote my answer down, and then she said, next question. So I spoke the next question, and she said, and then I responded, and she said, write it down. So I started writing, and she got up and she went in the kitchen and made coffee and did whatever, and I thought, well, I finished that one, so I went to the next one and the next one and the next one, and she came back and she said, well, how's it going? And I said, it's going okay. And she said, do you think you can do it now? And I said, yes, I think I can. And I went home and I was able to finish my 4th step and the rest of the steps. But I was just so grateful that she knew for some reason I needed something more than being alone to start this journey, and I'm really grateful for that. My sponsor has always been in service, and she went to lots of functions around the area. Her and I and a few other Al-Anon members would go to the AA assemblies, and the AAs were always very gracious to Al-Anon. They always had a room for us so that we could have Al-Anon meetings in case there were any friends of the AA members at their assembly that wanted an Al-Anon meeting. So I went to probably 5 years of AA assemblies, being at Al-Anon meetings there. Many wonderful people I've met through the AA assemblies. We went to a couple of regional service seminars that Al-Anon had, and I met plenty of people over the course of the years through that. Our group needed a group representative. And it was election time, and I had been a member now for 2.5 years, and I asked my sponsor, do you think that that's something that I can do? And she said, I don't see why you can't try. So when it came time for someone to be elected as a group representative, I said I was willing, and they said, okay. So I was the group rep for 3 years. Well, at one of the assemblies, I heard our delegates say that the WSO was really encouraging groups to have open meetings so that doctors or policemen or people that were just interested in Al-Anon could come to the meetings and find out what it was about. So when I came to our business meeting, I brought it up to the group and I said, I think it would be great if we had some open meetings. They wanted to know what open meetings were, and I told them and said, well, let's take a vote. And they all said, no, we don't want any open meetings. So I thought, well, they probably just need time to think about it. So the next month at the business meeting, I explained again what an open meeting was, that we could designate one meeting a month or something like that, and da-da-da-da-da. And I said, let's take a vote, and they all said no. So I thought, well, you know, they probably just need a little bit more time. So the third month, I didn't talk to my sponsor about this. I mean, she was at the business meeting. She could see what I was doing, but she allowed me the dignity to learn on my own. So the third business meeting, I said, okay, this is the last time, and they all said no. And then I went to my sponsor, and she said, did you ever think that you're trying to control the group? And I thought, oh crap, I didn't look at it that way. I just looked at it from my own perspective and understanding what the group conscience really is. And then we needed a district rep because it was time for another election, so I said that I'd be willing to do that. So I became the district rep for our district in Tennessee. Some of our meetings are way out there. I've got one meeting that at that time that was up near Kentucky, and I wanted to go visit them, and they met on a Friday night, and I asked the alternate district rep if she would like to go with me, but she couldn't make it. So I asked somebody in the group if they would like to go, and they said, sure. So we went up to the Lafayette, Tennessee Al-Anon meeting, and by the time it got finished and we started talking with everyone after the meeting, it was close to 9:45, and we had already made arrangements to stay in a motel that night instead of driving all the way back to Murfreesboro. It was, you know, close to 10 o'clock at night and back roads, and we didn't know where we were. So the next morning we get up, all the people that we saw that the night before, we all went out for breakfast, and I made new friends going on another journey. So that was really kind of exciting. Service has really helped me understand about the group conscience and about myself and about allowing other people to be who they are and not interfering in God's work. It was again time for us to have another election, and they elected the secretary and the treasurer, and I looked around the room and they said, who's eligible to be chairman? And I stood, and three other people stood up, and then the chairman said, and who's willing to stand as chairman? And I thought, well, you know, maybe I can do that. So I stood up. I figured that, you know, there were four other people standing that were eligible, and no one else stood up. And I looked around the room and I thought, oh God, what have I done? So they elected me chairman. And that was an experience, being the chairman of the area meetings. And I learned a whole lot at those meetings. Learned how to be more understanding, kind, and loving to others, and trying to understand how to use the program for conflict resolution. It was an interesting journey. And then 3 years after that, we had our elections again, and I stood for alternate delegate. And that was another journey for me. I went to visit all of the districts in Tennessee, and got to visit them and see how they do their district meetings and the problems that the area had with the districts, and that was very interesting. And then last year we had our election, and I stood for delegate, and they elected me. And in April was my first visit to the World Service Conference. I was so in awe at all of the, there was over 100 people there. And I was just in awe at how much took place, how much discussion was held with all of the delegates and the staff. It was really amazing. I was so in awe that I hardly took any notes. And when it came time for me to give my delegates report, I talked for an hour and 45 minutes, but I didn't have a lot of notes. But so I've learned something also to be really diligent about listening to the conversations. You know, I listened to everything that happened there, but I didn't take notes. And usually when I had been secretary of the group and of the district and the other items that I had, other service positions that I've had, I always took notes as a secretary, and then I'd go home and I'd type them up. Well, I brought my laptop with me, but I was so tired every night that I couldn't turn it on to start typing up what I had heard during the day. So I won't do that again, that's for sure. So I've been very blessed. The program has helped me understand how to make decisions for myself. I lived in a house in a small town outside of Murfreesboro, and it was I had 1 acre and 3 bedrooms and 1 person, me. And I wanted to sell my house, so I put it up for sale, and nothing happened. For 2 years, it was spotless. I had 2 different realtors, and nothing happened. And I asked my sponsor about it, and I said, I don't know what the heck's going on. She said, this is what she said to me, what I remember hearing her say. She said, Grace, God is building the house that you're going, God is building a house for the people that are moving out of the place you're going to move into. And I thought, isn't that interesting? That's a good way to look at it. So I just kind of said, okay, let go and let God. I just had to allow my higher power to do the work that he was supposed to do and not me get someone to buy my house. Well, shortly after I started Al-Anon, I worked in this construction office. And we had two-way radios, and one of the men in the other office was talking on the two-way radio, and I heard this voice over the two-way radio, and I thought, oh my God, that is the most beautiful voice I have ever heard. I think I'm in love. And then this man walked into the office, and he was tall. He had dark hair. He had brown eyes. He was the foreman of one of the divisions, and his skin was so brown, I know that if I touched it, it would be warm. And I was in lust, and just his voice was just awesome, and I just wanted, I didn't want to exhibit old behavior because I have a program now, and I'd only been in the program for a little over a year, and I didn't know what to do, but I know what I wanted, and I was working on step 3, and I had done step 4, and step 5, and step 6, and step 7, and I just know what I wanted, and it was him, and I became that insane person again. I would drive to work in the morning and think, I wonder if he drives on this road. I'd go to the grocery store. I wonder if he gets his groceries here. I wonder where he does his laundry. It was just all about him, him, him. And I had mentioned to some of my friends, and they joked with me and offered different suggestions, none of which are conference approved. But the worst part was is that I didn't want to do what I had done before. I wanted to exhibit different behaviors. I wanted to do the best I could and feel good about me. And finally, I called my sponsor. And it had been like about 3 months that this was going on in my head. And, you know, she was old. How can I talk to her? How could she understand what was going on and everything? And so I called her, and I beat around the bush trying to tell her these feelings that I was having. And finally she said, okay, Grace, just spit it out. And I said, I want his boots under my bed. And there was silence. And I thought, oh God, she's having a heart attack. And she said, I think you need to go back to step 3. Who is your higher power? And I thought, oh God. So, yes, she was right. I needed to focus on my higher power. What does my higher power want for me? I am turning my will and my life over to his care. He's going to take care of it. If that's what he wants for me, then that's what will happen. It didn't happen. And I'm okay today. But at the time, it was a real struggle. my want and my desires versus what God wants for me. So my house is up for sale, and it's been up for sale now for 6 years, and nothing happened. Well, this man, who is absolutely perfect but has a drinking problem, come into the office one day and says, my friend and I were out last weekend, and we came to your house, and he wants to buy it. And I said, but he hasn't seen it. I've been gone all weekend. He wants to buy it. And I thought, oh, my God. So I go through all of the mechanisms of getting the house sold, and we've got a deal. Now I have to find a place to live. So I knew I wanted to live in Murfreesboro, and I knew that I wanted to have a condo because I didn't want to have to worry about a yard and all that stuff. So I go to Murfreesboro, and I find this absolutely beautiful condo. And, you know, this is the first time I've done something like this alone. So I called my sponsor and asked her if her and her husband would come with me and look at the place. And I called one of my girlfriends from the program and said, I want you to look at it and give me your opinion. And I had already had a price in mind of what I was going to offer for the house. So we gets in there and we look at it, and they said, oh, God, Grace, it's beautiful. And I kept thinking, yeah, but it's too nice for me. It's too nice for me. So we're looking around, and the real estate, I said to the real estate agent, okay, I'm ready to make an offer. And she said, I have to tell you this. Somebody else has already made an offer, and it's a good one. I thought, oh, crap. What do I want, and what does God want for me? So she went out to her car to get the papers, and I said to my friends, let's go out on the patio. We need to pray. So we went out on the patio, said the serenity prayer. I said to the man, I said, give me a figure what you think this place is worth. And he said, this is the figure I come up with. And I thought, it's the same figure that I said. So when we went back in the house, I filled out the papers, made the offer. The woman said she'd let me know in a couple of days. And she called me the next night and said, it's yours. And I said, oh, isn't that wonderful? She said, there's one glitch, though. Their house is being built, and you can't move in until November. And I had already made a deal to move out of my house Labor Day weekend. And then I remembered what my sponsor had said years ago. God is building their house. They're not ready to move out yet. And when I bought this condo, God was building their house. So I said to my sponsor, I'm going to move all my stuff into a storage unit, and I don't know where I'm going to go. And she said, well, Grace, I just happen to have a 4-bedroom house. You could move in with me. And I said, I could. And she said, sure. Have you ever lived with your sponsor for 10 weeks? I got to see how she and her husband both worked their programs, and it was really, really awesome. The house that was being built for these people that I was moving into their condo was right down the street from my sponsor. So we got to walk by their new house every couple of days and got to move into my condo the week before Thanksgiving. It was really amazing. Something that happened while I was living with my sponsor and her husband, every once in a while they'd have a discussion. And the first time they had a discussion, he looked at me and he said, Grace, what do you think about that? I got quiet and I said, I think I'm going to my room. And I went upstairs, you know, because I had a thought about it and he wanted to know it. But I didn't need him to hear what my thought on their discussion was. And so they would, every once in a while, they'd play with me, and they'd talk about something, and they'd look at me and say, well, Grace, what do you think about that? And I said, I think it's none of my business. And then, so that was interesting that I was able to see how other people work their program together, husband and wife, AA and Al-Anon, and I was also able to not participate in their discussions. After having lived by myself for already 8 years, it was kind of different living with others, but it was an amazing experience. So I have a brother that lives next to me in the town next to where I live, and I've not seen him in about maybe 5 or 6 years, and it really hurts. The first couple of years after Mom passed away, he stopped calling and he stopped visiting with me. But every time Christmas came, I'd always go over to his house and visit with him and his family. And they were always so nice and gracious, but they never called me. And I would call on them every once in a while and say, hi, how's it going, what's new? And then there was nothing. And I have a brother that lives in New Hampshire, and he's the oldest. And I would go home and visit him every couple of years. And one of the times I visited, I realized that I got more from the visit with him than I did from the person who lives in the town next to me. So I made a decision on the way home that really hurt. I wasn't going to try to force myself on someone else that didn't want me there. He knows where I live, and he can reach out to me when it's time. But it doesn't mean that I don't love him. I have to allow him the dignity to do what he needs to do for him and his family and not me. My ex-husband lives in Florida, and he's still practicing. I have a family friend that lives down there, and every once in a while he'll call me and he'll say, boy, he looks real bad. He looks real bad. He looks real bad. And I say, Bob, the only thing we can do is pray, because there's always hope. And he said, I don't know, Grace. He looks real bad. And I get real emotional when I hear the AA speakers, because I know that there's hope. Even though he doesn't live with me anymore, and we're divorced and I haven't seen him in almost 16 years, I know that there's hope. Because you've told me that. There's always hope. Al-Anon has saved my life, and it saved his. There was a time when somebody needed to stop breathing in my house, and it wasn't going to be me. And my boss at the time, I thought my boss knew people that knew people that knew people. So one day at lunch, talking about the craziness of life. One day at lunch, I'm talking to my boss, and we're beating around the bush, and I'm trying to express to him that something needs to change in my home, and I think that it needs to be him, and that I'm sure that there's a way that he can stop breathing, but I just don't really know how to do it. And my boss held up his hand during lunch and said, stop, Grace. Don't say any more, because I'll have to call the authorities. And I thought, oh, God, there's nothing left now. There's nothing. There is no hope. It's just, I just can't go on like this anymore. And I knew I wasn't going to do anything to myself, but I was willing to do something to him. And, you know, because I had the courage, the craziness to go to my boss and talk about it, that was something that saved both him and me. So I look back and I see the things that my higher power has done for me and has done for my ex-husband, and it's okay today. I see that I was a good daughter and a good wife, and I'm a good person, and God loves me. And I know that there's nothing that I can ever do to make God stop loving me. And since I know that God loves me, I know that God loves all of us, all of you, everyone, everywhere, whether they're short or tall. None of us are average or all special in God's eyes. God doesn't have any grandchildren. We're all God's child. So I'm in Al-Anon one day at a time, and I'm grateful for the program. Again, I'm grateful for my sponsor. I'm grateful for roundups, retreats, conventions, conferences. I enjoy it all. I hope to see y'all again. Thank you for asking me to be here.